Greetings and welcome back to another episode of the Warrior Mind Podcast. I'm Greg Swanson, your mental strength coach, guide, and mentor. To find out more about mental strength and Warrior Mind coaching, you can visit us at www.warriormindcoach.com, and our famous blog is at www.warriormindcoach.com/blog. And again, I have my good friend, producer Rishi.
Thank you, Greg. Today, what do we have in mind today for our recording, for our podcast?
Well, we're going to finish up some of the things that we've done last week, but I think let's let our listeners know that we're coming up to another movie review.
Wonderful.
This week, Clint Eastwood movie
Hereafter.
Hereafter comes out, and it has some spiritual contents and some subconscious, unconscious stories in there, so we both agreed that it'd be a good one to review on our next podcast.
And for a lot of people, you know, the content, you know, is just really weird. And I love weird stuff, by the way. The more weird, the better. But just from, you know, what we've seen so far, it looks very interesting and something, you know, we can spend days just thinking about, like the other movie, Inception. Yes.
Yeah, those are very much. So you like weird? Is that why we hang out so much together?
Yes.
I completely agree with you. So what we're going to do is finish up. So, you know, 2 weeks ago we went through this image streaming or vision streaming on having and bringing people's awareness to that we're always receiving images from our, whether you want to call it our subconscious, unconscious, or other than conscious self, maybe would be a better way. And we took listeners and ourselves through this process of closing our eyes and just describing what we see, regardless of what comes, we just describe it. And I just want to make a clarification. There are two ways of seeing with your eyes closed, right? There's that seeing that's that patterns that are right behind your eyelids. Mm-hmm. Right, when you close your eyes, there's those patterns, and then there's your mind's eye, which is where you have your other images, your dreams. And so when we talk about closing your eyes and seeing what's there, it's not the images that are behind your eyelids, it's not the colors that are flashing around, although that may be a good start. What I'm referring to more is the images in your mind's eye. Those are where the receptors are, if you will, for the other than conscious images to come into. If that's all you can see, though, are the images behind your eyelid, for lack of a better description, then that's fine. Just start there, and by having the patience with it, that will increase. So after that, we moved over to, you know, walking through the veil, jumping the wall, whatever we want to call it, and that was where we purposely put our mind's eye. We had a vision, if you will, of a specific location. It could be a garden, it could be a forest, and we knew exactly where we were going, very similar to journey work. And we had a question we wanted to have resolved. And this question can even be very technical in nature, about creating a new invention or writing a white paper or something to that nature. And so we went through the process of describing where we were and then, boom, jumping over this wall or going through this veil and then rapidly describing what we saw in that, what we call the answer space or the area where the answer is being delivered to us. The purpose of describing out loud, one, it's to keep the conscious mind occupied. And then also, by going to some place that we know, the conscious mind can be active in creating that for us. Then when we jump over or break through that veil into the answer space, that's where our unconscious mind comes in and gives us images. And so we then started to describe these images out loud, either to a person, a coach, or a recorder. And so for the last two sessions, we've taken individuals through this process of collecting images. Wonderful, yes. Right?
Yes, and what do they mean?
Right, exactly. So here we are. What the heck? I have all these images floating around my head, and I'm seeing things, and I'm feeling things, and what's going on here?
And is this very similar to dream analysis and people in interpreting dreams?
This process we're about to go through can be used for dream analysis. Yeah. You know, last session we talked about going to experts to have them analyze our dream, and I still don't think that it's very, I don't want to say appropriate, but it may not be the best way.
Yeah, individuals vary. What a symbol, what an image I see, what it means to me may be different from what it means to you.
Exactly.
And if I tell you that, then you may impose your values onto me, saying, "Oh, this is what these images represent." When we may have completely different points of view.
Exactly. And the interesting thing here is, not to get too complicated with this, but these images are coming from our other than conscious. Some of them may be coming from our higher self, if you will, but they're all going through our other than conscious, our unconscious or our subconscious. And what's interesting is that is where our beliefs and our values are. So these images that we see are correlations to our life experiences, our beliefs and our values. So those three factors are all influences into these images. If you were a Native American, you would have more Native American type symbols if you did this type of work. If you were a European, you would have different type of symbols in this type of work. So whatever your, you know, history is, where you are, you're going to have those type of symbols come up. But the whole process that we've done so far is basically we want to outrun the editing of our conscious mind. By describing very quickly what's happening, we're not giving our conscious mind time to jump in there and mess and mess with our head, if you will. And there's this terminology called exformation as opposed to information. Getting back to, we have, you know, 2 million bits of information coming into us, and our conscious mind can only handle 126 bits. What's that other information? That's the exformation. Mm-hmm. That's the information that we filter out. It doesn't mean that we don't have access to it. Mm-hmm. It just means that we're not consciously aware of it. So this exformation contains tons of information to help us improving our life, answering questions. Those are all part of the images as well. So by bypassing our conscious mind, we can get access to this exformation. And then by describing it out loud, it brings it into our conscious mind so we can then see it and vocalize it and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we get back to NLP, and NLP goes that all information in our conscious is encoded as representations of either visual, auditory, kinesthetic, olfactory, or gustatory. Every single experience we have can be one or accumulation of those. Okay. So we'll either have an image, maybe we have a feeling. I mean, you can even think of, you know, a big holiday that you like, and you start thinking of the smell, all of a sudden, you know, all those images come screaming back. Well, those are the experiences that has been encoded. And we can call those, in NLP, we call those internal representations as opposed to an image, because some people think an image is just visual and they stop. They don't check to see if there's a sound associated with it or see if there's a feeling with it. So we'll just call it, you know, an internal representation. Does that make sense so far?
It makes sense.
Okay. So what we're going to do is, so let's say you had an image of something or a picture of something and you wanted to decipher it. Well, there's two aspects to it. There is the content itself. What is it? And then there's the process or how it's represented. You may have done an image stream and found a old treasure chest that was opened up with a rusty lock, and inside of it was some gold pieces, and there was a little light coming out of the corner, and it was on a grassy plain, and all of that would describe what it is. But then how is it represented in your mind? Is it a still picture? So these are what we call the submodalities.
Okay.
And the submodalities then basically describe the quality of the picture. Is it black and white? Is it color? Is it panoramic? Is it still? Is it motion? Is there sound associated with it? Is it, do you have a kinesthetic feeling? Is it a tactile feeling, or is it a feeling of an emotion with it? And so those are all part of those images. So the more you describe the image itself and all the details of it, and actually there is even a part where it's a position in space when you see it. If I asked you to think of what's your favorite dessert?
I'd say chocolate brownie ice cream. Okay.
If I asked you to describe, leaving your eyes open, if you were going to think of chocolate brownie ice cream, where would that picture be? In front of you, to the side, up, down?
It'd be in front down. Not at eye level, but more like waist level.
Okay. And about how far away?
About between 2 and 3 feet away.
Okay, so that's great. So you see how there's a spatial. Now, if I asked you to describe something that you hate, like maybe sardines.
Okay.
So visualize sardines. Where would that be?
It would probably be on top of the chocolate brownie ice cream, just ruining it.
Right.
No, but seriously, it would be further away. It'd be further away. In fact, it would still be inside the can at the supermarket where I'd want to leave it.
Right. So there's a different picture. You have a different representation, right,
yes,
when you think of these two things. One of them is pleasant, and it's in a certain specific area away from your vision. There's another one that's not pleasant, and it's farther away. This gives you a hint as to what that image means.
Okay.
So by describing in detail these images that you get from over the wall or vision streaming, it can help you decode its message by knowing some of those things. Where, you know, what, when you see something that you like, where does it look? When you see something you don't like, where is it? So the process here is, right, we've done is we observe, we describe, and then we are now going to go to interpret it. And it, you know, Rishi, you're big on mythology.
Sure.
And I've been drawn into that rabbit hole with you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And mythology serves a tremendous purpose for actually helping us with belief change and other things. Because our other than conscious has its internal representations in pictures, it's basically a metaphor. So our unconscious is talking to us in metaphors. And just to take a little sidebar here, to talk to our unconscious, one of the best ways is to talk to it in metaphors. And no better metaphor than mythology.
Correct.
And so if a person is stuck in a specific belief or consternation of some type, a very good hypnotherapist will talk to the person and then bring up a metaphor. So they'll get them into trance so they can directly communicate with the unconscious. And it's not a hypnosis session per se. They still can have their eyes open. But they'll bring up a metaphor and a mythology, and they'll talk to the person about it, not saying how it associates with their problem, but they'll go, okay, do you get it now? And they'll go, yes, I do. And all of a sudden the unconscious knows what to do because it speaks metaphors.
Yes.
A little bit of a sidebar. So for those who like metaphors and mythology, this is the opposite, where our other than conscious is talking to us in metaphors. And it's our job to decipher that, like Joseph Campbell deciphers the mythology.
Yes.
It's our job to decipher our own mythology.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And so that's why those, you know, mythology and metaphors are so experienced. And so what the process is, we want to develop a cipher, right?
Okay.
A secret ring, a cipher of our own mythology, so that we can...
Like a Captain Crunch decoder ring?
Exactly.
Okay.
If we get a decoder ring going here, we're going to be absolutely unstoppable. And so part of, you know, when we went back to the over the wall, through the veil type process, I don't know if you remember, we talked about when you get into your answer space, if you see an object that draws you into it, you ask it, what's its purpose there? And you ask it the same question. I don't know if you remember that part.
Yes.
Right. So the trick, or not the trick, is one of the keys is to, when you're in your answer space, you have your original answer, you would like to find two other objects and ask them the same question. It could be an object, it could be a person. Because what you want to use is the old triangulation.
Okay. I thought you just want to get a second and third opinion.
Well, in a sense, isn't that what triangulation is? If you're lost in the wilderness and you don't know where you are and you're guessing, you want to get a second and third opinion. So you would get your compass out. You take a reading on a landmark that's on the map. Maybe it's a mountain. You take a landmark that's a stream. You draw the lines and you know where you are now. So you got your second and third opinion to know where you are. Well, that would be the same process here as getting these three. So your original question and two others. And this whole time you're just describing things to your recorder or the person who's with you. What you then do is start to look at the similarities in those three answers and the dissimilarities. The three answers, the similarities would be those three points that tell you kind of, okay, here's three things that's interesting. What does it mean? We still don't know what it means, but those are three interesting aspects because they appeared in all three answers. And that would be helping with that triangulation. The other thing to be aware of with the description is when you're describing the characteristics versus what we call a mind read or projecting what that may be. For example, if you jumped over the wall and you're in the forest and you come across a lion, you could say, oh, the lion looks friendly. Well, that would be a projection because you don't know. That's a feeling, right? But it is a lion. That's a fact.
Yes.
It's got four legs. It's a lion. Great. But it looks friendly is not – that's your interpretation of it. So you want to make sure that those two are separated in your notes, that the facts – here it is. It's lion, four legs. It's this tall. It's green. It's with purple dots, whatever it is. Looking friendly, looks hungry. You know, those type of things you want to put off to a different section. The other thing is, and we're going to bring this all together in a few seconds. There's a lot of different parts to this. So that's part of putting these associations together. And then another thing that Carl Jung utilizes, it's when-then. So when I jumped over the wall, then I saw this. And you start doing this when-then, which brings a direct correlation. So when this happened, this happened. When this happened, this happened. So when I did this, my unconscious mind did this. When I did this, so it gives you a sense of how your unconscious mind is talking to you.
Okay.
And then one of the best things, so once you're done with this, with all this information, like what do I do? What do I do? How does this work? One of the best ways, I would say, this is what would be really helpful with dream analysis. You get a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle. On the left side, put the title of the bar, images, if you will. And then on the right side, put associations or interpretations. So you on the left side, you write down, okay, so a lion, frog, rock, tree, boom, boom. Okay, what does a lion mean to me? Okay, it means being powerful. What does a frog mean to me? Being subtle. You know, what is a tree to me? Being strong and rooted. What does a rock mean to me? Being determined. And so then you look at all of that and say, how does this address my question? Oh, okay, so what I need is I need to be, need to be powerful. I need to be determined. So then you go, how do I do that? And then you ask your questions again. But I want to stop now because that was a lot of information. I'm sure there are some questions that come up.
Yeah, and a lot of people who are just listening to your last part where you have two columns and you write down, what the image is and what they mean to you. The example that you gave, Greg, those were images that obviously meant to you, but someone who's listening, just whatever, for instance, a frog to Greg means what did you say?
I said subtle.
Yeah, to other people it can mean slimy.
Right.
So just remember to interpret these images what they mean to you, specifically to you.
Right. And what I like is even with this is even to use the remote viewing part where you move fast. This is where your conscious mind's going to come into play. And it's okay for it to come into play now is when you start doing these associations. Because you have these images, right? You've collected all these images throughout your whole life. You've had these images. These are unique to you. These are your own runes,
yes,
if you will, right? These are yours. And you're basically, when you go through the veil, you're casting your runes out there. And now it's your turn to interpret them. But they're yours. They're unique to you. These images are unique to you based on your beliefs, your values, your life experiences, and where you're going to go with those values and beliefs intact. And this is very key. Mm-hmm. So then when you interpret these, you know what a rock would mean. You know what a tree would mean to you in your life in that context, right? So in the image that you, the whole picture, the panoramic image that you saw, you know what those things represent. Well, you may say you don't. Well, pretend you do and you will.
and if you think you don't, just take some time to think about, you know, your past experience with those images. For instance, if you see a rock, okay, what does a rock have to do with anything? Well, think about a time when you were associated with rocks. Maybe you were at a pond skipping stones. That's an example. You may have had an experience with a rock, or maybe you got hit pretty bad with a rock. That's another. So just go back and just think to yourself when you were associated with these images, and then again, you know, you kind of like are your image streaming that way also,
right?
To an answer.
And these are processes that Socrates used, and Plato, and Einstein, and the geniuses in our eras, if you will, our past, used this process or very similar process, where they would collect images and they knew that it was their unconscious talking to them, and it was their conscious mind's job, or their, you know, I guess, job, if you will, to decipher that code. So this is, you know, a code was given to you. Here's this cryptic hieroglyphics, mm-hmm. right? It's just like reading a wall of hieroglyphics. Here are these images that are given to you that actually have the solution to your problem. They're right there. You have it. Now you decipher it. Mm-hmm. And the key is, when you start doing this paper, that's basically your dictionary. Mm-hmm. So as you keep more and more, whether it's dreams or whether it's image streaming, journey work, whatever it may be, the more details you can describe of it, because again, it could be a rock, but it could be a small rock. It could be a large rock. It could be made out of granite. It could be made out of sandstone. Each one of those are going to be something different. So it's, yes, just not what it is. That's where those, what we call those submodalities, come in. Where was the image from you? Is it 2 feet away? So if Rishi saw an image that was really far away, it may represent something that he doesn't like, because the sardines were way far away.
Yes.
But his chocolate sundae was very close. So if the image was very close and bright and colorful, whatever the image may be, it could have been a bird. It would be, okay, this represents something I like, because it's in the same spatial plane and has the same qualities of my chocolate brownie ice cream sundae.
Yes.
So those would be some associations. So it's not just what it is and not just the color of it, but it's all of those submodalities that you look into it. And it's when you get that deciphering code, it really is. It's basically your own hieroglyphics. It's your own runes. It's your own divinations. It's everything that you have access to. And it does take time. It's, you know, these scientists who go into Egypt and decipher the hieroglyphics there, it took them years and years and years and years and years. You don't have to take that long because you're writing them.
Yeah, they're your own. It's your own language.
Right.
Which is really amazing when you think about it, because you get to, in a way, get in touch with your own individual self and also see what a unique person you are.
Right. This is just, it's very exciting when, because if this was just something new that was created yesterday, you would be like, okay, does it work? Doesn't it? You know, what are these crazy guys over here in this podcast talking about this stuff? And what are they smoking? And
we should do a podcast like that. Just make something up. And, right.
That's what they're probably thinking now. But the thing is, this is a process that great philosophers and great inventors and others have used this process. Some have called it remote viewing, and that is a part of it also. But it's basically a method to get in touch with our other than conscious to get answers to situations we have in life. Those answers could be for inventions or improving something, or if you're getting stuck somewhere. But these are all ways that you have the answers. So, I mean, what's really exciting is that we underestimate how powerful we really are as humans. We completely underestimate this. And if you realize that you have the solution to every single challenge you're facing right now, you have it inside you. Your unconscious knows what to do. And you now have the key to get that information. You just need some patience and time to decipher it, and everything is going to be great.
And coaching too.
Right. And that's part of it, is, you know, is the coaching. I think coaching helps not decipher it, but helps build reflective questions around it, helps you take action on it, and those type of things. So coaching is very, very...
Let's talk about taking action, because someone may be able to decipher an image and then see clearly what that person needs to do. But what if that person just has some kind of like an apprehension of taking the first step?
Oh, sure. That would be... I don't want to say that could be common. I don't want to put any projections out there, but it could be a very rare case for our listeners, because
it happens.
Because you get this information, like, how do you know it's real? Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's part of I'll get back to the taking action, but part of this is when you're in your image stream and you ask these powerful objects, how do I know this is important to me? And it'll answer you. So you kind of, instead of sitting there just observing, you communicate with these images. You know, how do I know it's important? What is going to happen? So then you get a kind of a sense for it. So you come back and you go, okay, here's what I need to do. Okay, I really don't want to do this. Well, that would be where coaching could come in, because there could be a fear of success. Mm-hmm. You know, most people talk about a fear of failure. Well, here's the other tricky part, right? There's this... The unconscious job is to keep and preserve the body. Well, regardless of where a person is in their life, if they're alive, the unconscious mind says, hey, we're doing a great job. You're alive. Everything's well. We don't need to change anything.
Yeah, that's correct. It's kind of like, how would I put it? Yeah, it's just preserving what it has.
Right. And in its perspective, it's saying we're doing fine. We don't need to do anything else. So it doesn't want to change. It gives you the answer to change, but then there's a part of it, you know, that, so this is that where coaching comes in and some fun things happen. There's different communications that happen with the conscious mind at this point. So this is where coaching would take place.
Just thought of the perfect, I was thinking just now, like what I could relate this to is, for instance, if you have say that you just got a brand new Corvette, and you want to keep it in its, you know, in its shiny, brand new condition, so it stays in your garage all year long. But, you know, obviously, you know, owning a Corvette, you know, you'd obviously want to take it out for a drive, but at the same time, you don't want to ruin its nice shine, so it's in your garage
right
all day long. I just had to interrupt you.
No, that's a great metaphor. You know what would have been great with that? If you go, hey, listen, you know, let me ask you, if you didn't... Here's how metaphors work. This is perfect, Rishi. Mm-hmm. That metaphor is perfect for the content, what we were talking about. And if it was like, hey, let me just tell you a story. You know what? I just got this new car, beautiful new car, and I just want to keep it in pristine condition. And I put it in the garage, and I washed it and waxed it, and I never drove it anywhere. But it just was in prime condition. But by not driving it, I'm not really having any joy out of it. So that's kind of a interesting story. With metaphors, you want to end it on a good note. So then you go, you know what? I realized after a while that I wasn't enjoying this car. So then I took it out and was able to enjoy it.
And then I found that supermodel.
Right.
Who liked it.
Who wants to date you. But that would have been a metaphor if a person didn't want to take action, was afraid to keep it, and you just said, hey, can I tell you a story? Well, I got this car. Mm-hmm. And then you just say, and then we went out and I enjoyed it. Then they would go, oh, I get it.
Oh, okay.
So then you would tell them that it's okay to go out and do something their unconscious would realize it. You wouldn't have to say, this represents your beliefs and this represents not taking action. The unconscious would have known it.
Okay. I got to work on my storytelling.
No, it was good. It was good. But you know, that would be a coaching session. If a client came to you and said, you know, I got this great new answer, but I'm just afraid to take action on it. You would go, well, can I tell you a story? I got this brand new car and I just wanted to keep it. We can belabor that point over and over. But this is really, really exciting for me because it's part of, when you look at a warrior mind, it's not the aspect of the old rape, pillage type mindset. When you look at the really powerful individuals in history, they had the physical strength, they had the mental strength, and they had that connection with their higher self that allowed them to interpret information and make great decisions in battle. I mean, how would generals and others know what the right thing to do when they can't even see the whole battlefield? Well, their unconscious knows, and they have these gut feelings, right? It's this gut feeling that you talk about.
Oh, yeah. Even watch Drew Brees play, the quarterback for the Saints. There are a few times when I saw him play, and there'd be someone on defense that'd creep up behind him to get a sack. But somehow, subconsciously, Brees knew that something was coming, and he'd just avoid it.
Yep, and that gets into another subject of the peripersonal space that we have that extends about 3 feet past us.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Which is cool, but that peripersonal space is connected to our other than conscious also. Mm-hmm. But this whole aspect is, you know, we hear about ESP and gut feeling and intuition and how do you build it. All this helps with that. Because the more you communicate and the more you build rapport with your unconscious and trust it, that's the key, trust it and take action on it, the more it's going to be able to signal you as to the proper actions to take or not take in any given situation. Drew B is a great example, right? There's some generals out there. There are business people who know the right thing to do at the right time. I mean, there are just so many examples of it. Yeah, they may not all do image streaming. They have trusted their unconscious from the very beginning, so they've already built that rapport. But for us who aren't in those situations where we have to trust our gut every single day, in those high-intensity situations, these are great practices to build up our communication with our unconscious.
I agree.
And
I agree.
And so it's just some very powerful, powerful information.
I wouldn't see any reason why your unconscious would want to deceive you.
Nope.
Unless you really have a disdain for yourself, but other than that.
And even if you have a disdain for yourself, that's your conscious that has a disdain for yourself. Your unconscious doesn't. Its job is to preserve and protect you.
Okay.
Now, before we close off here, I just want to, here's something that is an interesting caveat. So these images that you're getting are based on your life experiences, your values, and your beliefs. You can't really change your life experiences, but you can change your values and you can change your beliefs.
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Right. Hey, it sounds like a song. So if you change your beliefs, even if it's a limiting belief, right, because basically what you're asking your unconscious is, with this complete package that I have right now, what's the best way to answer this problem that I have, right, with this package? The package is your beliefs, your values, and your past history. And it's saying the optimum trajectory based on these to get this problem solved is this direction. If you change your beliefs, even if it's a limiting belief, your what we call in remote viewing, your optimum trajectory is going to change. And the answer to your problem is going to change. So if you realize, or as you're interpreting the information that you have, and you realize that the answer is supporting a limiting belief that you have,
mm-hmm.
you might be advised to change the belief and do another image stream. Because or just go ahead and solve the problem and then go back and change the belief, because you want to solve the problem first potentially anyway.
Yeah.
But just keep in mind that these images are coming from you and part of your beliefs. So when you change something, the formula changes.
Just like algebra.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. So Rishi, what do you think about that three-part series we just did?
It was amazing and definitely valuable information, and free too.
Yes. Yes. And so I just hope everybody enjoyed it. And please, you know, go back to the other podcasts. I did put some notes on the blog site that you can take and use for basically the bulk vision streaming, and then for over the wall. And then here, please contact me if you'd like some one-on-one coaching about doing this process or any other type of issues that you might be having. And remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And if you don't take the rightful responsibility and begin to program your own mind, the world will